But great to be on your show, Adrian.
Thank you. John, it would be before we start talking about the Fitzpatrick Hotels, you have been the past chairman forever of the American Ireland Fund, of course, following in the footsteps of Loretta Brennan Glucksman, past chair also of the Hotel Federation, the Association of New York Hotels, and you've held so many roles, particularly in the area of, you know, philanthropy. For those, you know, who wanted help, support at just about any level, somehow they found John Fitzpatrick. And I just thought I'd mention that in passing, because a lot of people perhaps do not know that aspect of it. John, your mom and dad, Etna and Paddy Fitzpatrick, founded one of the greatest hotels and indeed best known hotels in Ireland, the Fitzpatrick Castle Hotel, in 18th century castle overlooking Dublin Bay, founded by the Fitzpatricks. That was in 1971. The history of that castle, and, you know, when we talk about castles in Ireland, there are castles and then there are very special castles dating back, giving us a great, great feel for days of yore. Tell us about the Fitzpatrick Killiney Castle.
Listen, it was my father. Well, when we all lived in Wexford originally, and then we moved up when my father started to work for P.B. Doyle, another great hotelier in his time, and the Doyle Hotels Group. So he then decided to go out on his own, and we lived in Killiney, and there was that Killiney Castle, which was more of a guest house then at the time, and this himself and mum decided to take a leap at it and jump by it and convert it into a, you know, at that stage it was a 50-bedroom hotel, and then he further extended to 100 rooms. But we were all very young at the time, but it was a great hotel, and it is a great hotel. With my sister, thank God, finally reopened it there about a week ago, because it's been open since 1970, and this is the first time any of our hotels have ever closed during this crazy times we're in. But it was the first hotel, and it took off very well, and, you know, Dad loved the business, and just it grew up in us all. And then he finally bought the Shan and Shamrock in Bunratty, County Clare, and then right. We went on to the Silver Springs, and it was then now in 1901 that I came to New York and to open the Fitzpatrick Manhattan on Lexington Avenue. It was a great, great hotel, the Killiney Castle, and still is.
It surely is, and I think to a memory jog there to what was, you know, a section of Ireland west of the Shannon there, we had a great airport, Shannon International Airport, and very few hotels, and for that matter, when the Shannon Shamrock, the Fitzpatrick Shannon Shamrock came in, it was just a tremendous, it was a sprawling, lovely, ultra-modern hotel there in, you know, in the shadow of Bunratty Castle, another area. And I think many of us, particularly immigrants from Ireland, that might indeed have been the last stop on the way to places like America and the first stop on the way back. What era was that, the Shannon Shamrock?
Well, Dad bought Kalani in 1971, and then about 76, he bought the 76, 77, he bought the Shannon Shamrock. And it was owned by an American, but Dad saw the potential of it. And you're dead right, Adrian. It was people, you know, that was the time we had the stopover in Shannon. So, you know, a lot of people would either leave from Shannon or arrive into Shannon and then work their way up to the East Coast. So we converted, but it was a great stop for the Americans. I mean, if you think of any American tourists, they all would either have stayed in the Shannon Shamrock because it was so close to Bunratty Castle or the famous pub Dirty Nellie's. And I must say, whenever I go back to Ireland, I still like to go down because a lot of our employees still live in the area, and you know, I catch up with them and that. But unfortunately, it closed during the bad times and during the financial crisis, and now it's still sitting there empty. You know, a local business bought it, but didn't decide to hold on to the land, but didn't do anything with it. And they call it now it's like a black hole in Bunratty, and they're trying to do something. I looked at it, I have to say, a good few years ago, and was for sale, but I just didn't go through it in the end. Pity, because it was one of our best hotels. I have great memories of it too.
John Fitzpatrick, when you arrived in New York, cheeky as you were, not just to lease a hotel or to rent a space, but to establish the very first ever Irish hotel in New York City. I distinctly remember when you came in and your father when you came to New York, and we had known, of course, the Fitzpatrick family forever. But it was a very bold move at the time, particularly to come into what was a wildly expensive, place to set up a hotel and to buy a hotel, many of which, by the way, were not making it. They were some of them were dated at best, and others perhaps with less experience than you and the Fitzpatricks, came in and thought it would be a great idea to open up a hotel in New York. Locating the place and for that matter, finding the financing of Fitzpatrick Manhattan Hotel. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, it was always my father's dream. And as you know, a lot of our business was American business in coming into Ireland, and, you know, in the good old days when they come in and their huge bus tours. And so Dad would spend a lot of time out in the States selling both our Irish hotels. So he kept saying to me as we were growing up, you know, there's Irish pubs all over the United States, and especially in New York, but there's no Irish hotel. It was his dream. And, you know, after finished my training in Kalani, I went out then to UNLV in Las Vegas to a hotel school there, and then I came back and got the taste of America, and then I wanted to go back out again and work for someone else besides my father, which was a lot easier at times. And I went to a great hotel there, a small hotel outside Chicago, and it was a great Irish-American, Joe English, and worked for him for a year. So I had the taste of America when I came back. So Dad decided, let's try and do it. And I know it was a bit crazy looking back on it at the time because, you know, we're a very small group, and compared to the hotel groups that were there in Ireland already, Jury's was flying, the Doyle Hotel, which is still there, is flying. So, but it was just Dad's idea, and we just looked and we found this building. And we looked for a while. To be honest, we looked at New York, we looked at Chicago, we looked at LA, we looked everywhere. But we felt New York, where it was the toughest city to do business in, we knew if we could just get going there that it was the place to be. And I remember my father visiting the banks when we were close to buying the Fitzpatrick Manhattan on 57th Street. And the bankers just said to him, you know, Paddy, why New York? Why that else? And, you know, it just came out of him as if, like, it was like the song. He said, look, it's like Frank Sinatra said, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And they all start laughing. I don't know if they thought he was crazy or what it was, but we eventually got there. We opened in a tough time, 91, during the Gulf War.
Yeah.
And And you know, but I think it was a little bit of ignorance and a lot of luck, and a huge amount of support from the Irish living in New York and the States, and the Irish in Ireland. They, you know, it took a while. I have to say, people thought we were crazy, and I do remember people calling in and saying, "Is this guy, is he going to make it?" But the support we got after we opened, and no one in our right mind did we think we'd ever open a second one in New York, and it was great. So tough at the beginning, but it paid off in the end.
John, moving forward, I don't think anybody could have imagined in their wildest dreams that New York City, above all places, could be, you know, decimated, which is, you know, putting it mildly, as much as with the pandemic. What was, and let's go back to March, and let's go back to the throngs of people who had arrived from Ireland, for that matter, just about everywhere into New York. Your hotel's brimming, and how did you manage at that point when it became very obvious that this wasn't, you know, that the reaction couldn't be any old time, but rather, you know, it was almost as if there was a massive fire in New York. Everybody had to move. What was the hotel scene like there in the Fitzpatrick Hotel?
Yeah, well, I actually do think of it over the last few weeks because you're right. It was March. We actually, when we first heard of it, we were down in Washington. Everybody, you know, for St. Patrick's Week, kind of some people go straight to Washington, and then we were all at the Ireland Fund dinner. And it was that night that the president shut down, you know, Europe, and within a few days that no flights were coming in. So, you know, I was in Washington on the 13th, and everybody was getting ready to come up to New York, and some people had already arrived. And before we knew it, we were on our way back. You know, the White House reception was cancelled, other breakfasts, the Northern Ireland breakfast cancelled. So it happened very quickly. Got back to New York, and as I was heading back to New York, my phone was popping off, you know, all the reservations, John, we were meant to come to you today, but we're cancelling, unfortunately. And that happened through Shane Cookman, my operations director, yeah, and Patrick Layden down in Grand Central. So we just, within 36 hours, the hotel just emptied. And then we could see it just happened very quickly. So we had to make a decision, you know. We all thought when we came through 9/11, which was another horrible time for New York, and mainly New York because that's where it happened, with the loss of lives and everything. But when we came out of that, we all kind of said to ourselves, well, we won't be going through that again in our lifetime, thank God, we hope. And then this happened. So, listen, a lot more lives lost, and look, we just have to look at the bright side and say, look, New York, I think the governor has done a hell of a job with the mayor and trying to get this city back to where it should be. But it's slow. It's going to be slow. So we had to make a big decision. We couldn't keep two hotels open. It was pointless. So we made the decision to keep Grand Central opened. And people say, well, why do you keep Manhattan? That was the first hotel you opened. Everyone kind of relates back to there. And I said, look, because we were looking after the Aer Lingus flight crew, and they were in Grand Central. But I also had in the back of my mind that we had an outdoor bar and an outdoor restaurant. And we said, you know what, when things open, maybe that will be the first. And we were lucky, I'm guessing that, and that's what happened. So we kept Grand Central open, but very quiet. You know, we decided to keep it open for some frontline workers, and anyhow we did. And we did some rooms from Lenox Hill and a few doctors that flew in and things like that. But mainly, you know, city people too, you know, from the city, a lot of people to stay overnight. So, it was very quiet. It was very quiet. But thank God last week, you know, things have improved in New York. And thank God the Aer Lingus crew are back with us since last Monday. But, you know, it's like, I think the hardest thing is to see an empty hotel. You know, the heart of the hotel is the employees and the guests. And when I walk through Manhattan and still see it closed, it's tough. But it's come back, Adrian. It'll come back so strong because New Yorkers always come back. And, you know, we'll just get through. We just hope now these other states get themselves in order and get back to, like the governor has with New York. But, you know, it's great to see New York going from one of the worst states to now probably being one of the best states and the safest states, you know.
What? How does it work? I think particularly in New York with, you know, and I join you in congratulating the governor of New York, who, you know, took the bull by the horns and led us pretty much through this. How does one, you know, 100 plus room hotel, you know, how do you adjust to such a limited catering area? Obviously, you know, anybody who goes to a hotel expects that, you know, it has to do with bed and breakfast, it has to do with the convenience of, you know, of your lunches, your dinners, your events. How do you, you know, sit down and say, okay, here we go. How does that work? I mean...
Yeah. Well, look, Adrian, what we're saying is the new normal. There is, I don't think until there's a vaccine, and this could be a while away yet, there's the new normal. So we've had to put in new protocols. Basically now when you walk into the hotel, anybody, if you're a guest or an employee or anything, first of all, you got to go through a heat temperature to check your temperature coming in. And if you're checking into the hotel, you then go to the front desk. And, you know, all the staff are wearing masks, having all our guests wear masks when they're walking through the lobby. When they sit down to have a cup of coffee or anything, of course, they can take it off. But they're now greeted with a welcome pack, you know. And as I said, the day of the guest is looking for more than the chocolate on their pillow now. So we give them a welcome pack. And unfortunately, at the moment, it's going to be a set of gloves, a face mask, sanitizer, and swipes, and then, you know, but all the hotel has been thoroughly deep cleaned, and we're going on to all the public areas every 30 minutes, cleaning all the door handles, all the switches, and then when you go into the restaurant, we have to have social distancing, and, you know, as I said, the outdoor restaurant is open, thank God, at the moment, but, and I was down there last night before I left, just to check it, and I have to say the customers are being very good, they're keeping their distance, but it is a restriction. You're down to about 50% of your capacity now, and so we've actually, the city have been great too, to give permits for street cafes, so now we've tables out on the streets, and to make up some of the loss we can't put inside, and it's coming back, it is definitely coming back, and I think, you know, thank God this happened in the summer months and not in the winter months, because in the winter months, you know, it right. would be just awful. So you have to look on the bright side of a bad thing, you know, but it's there, and it's yeah. great to see customers coming back. We are getting a few, would you believe, customers that are now beginning to come. We had a family check in a few weeks ago from Boston, and I'm going, we were in the hotel, and someone said, there's a family checked in from Boston, but this is saying nothing was open. So we went out to them and we asked them, hey, you're, first of all, you're very welcome, and, you know, what made you come to New York? They said, we just had to get out of our house. So they just had to leave and drive down, I said, and, walk, you know, spend a couple of days. So we are resilient, and we will come back.
Your experience, you know, and being... you know, the past chair of the Hotels Association of New York, the Federation, and, you know, and your reputation nationwide, you cannot basically, again, and I've, you know, I've referred to it before, but a hotel, a restaurant, many of... the restaurants in particular are having a really tough time. And, you know, so many of the restaurants in New York City, in the vicinity of both of your hotels, have relied very heavily on, again, you know, tourists who would come, people who would come to your hotels, and then whether that's, you know, Rosie O'Grady's or any for that matter, those restaurants. What is actually happening? What is the plan? Is there a plan? And what's the current situation? Paint a picture for us, if you will, of, say, the restaurants in Manhattan. Now, what is the regulation now with respect to indoor dining versus outdoor or whatever?
Well, look, it's a very good point. You know, the hotel industry in New York is a very important industry to the city. It, you know, and taxes alone, it raises $3.1 billion to the city, to help the city. And there's an add-on effect. So if the hotels don't operate, then the restaurants don't open, and the restaurants don't, they rely on local business, but they need tourism. And it's a two-edged sword. And if the restaurants aren't open for us, we can't, get customers in. And so it's at the moment, we're doing our best. Let's hope that we can get open quicker. So the first move was outdoor dining, and that has helped get people to come out of their apartments, help people to come out and just socialize a little bit and feel safe. They have to feel safe, because if they don't feel safe, they're not going to do it. So that's kind of stage one. And, you know, thank God that some of the local restaurants too, as I said, the city has given special permits, they can put tables outside. But it's a two-edged sword until, you know, we both rely on each other, and until all the stores open. As you see, some of the stores are open, like Bloomingdale's is open, for instance, and then some of the others haven't opened because, you know, there's not enough business there. And I think that has been due to, you know, the 4th of July was last weekend.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people took the last week off too as well. So we're hoping now next week and so. But truthfully, from a corporate point of view, I can't see our business coming back till September. I think you're coming into the holiday season now at the end of July, August. And talking to our corporate clients, and I'm talking about domestic corporate, and they're saying, well, look, yes, some people are back in their offices, but it's only 20% or 30%. But it'll be really September before we go full back in. So we're hoping that that's what it is. But I don't see any big improvement till September, I'll be honest with you, you know.
Yeah, but let's take head on. And I know that you mentioned that the governor of New York did a great job, and he did too. But with all due respect to our current mayor in New York, there are those who have plenty of complaints, particularly in the hospitality industry, about, you know, just about everywhere you look, there are stimulus packages, there are headlines saying that those, you know, a great number of huge corporations, you know, are getting the stimulus, particularly those who don't need it, and they become the headline. But what about the hotel tax, the hospitality tax? I mean, excuse me, but that has to be addressed now, not down the road.
Well, look, you're 100% right. I mean, that stimulus pack, first of all, I do want to say that's the CARE Act, and we did take part in that. And where you're allowed to apply for either a grant or a loan, depending on how you use the money. But 75% of that was to be put to get your employees back at work. And that was important to us, because some of my employees are with me since we opened. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We're going over 30 years. And to get them back at work. But again, getting them back at work, and there was no business coming in, and it only lasted for a period of time. So that was one good thing the city did. But I totally agree. For instance, last week, all hotels had to pay their real estate tax, and we had a huge bill to pay last week. And the problem with the real estate tax and how it's formulated in the city is that it's based on your revenue from last year. That's one part of it. And the other part of it is based on the value of your hotel. So you can imagine over the last 3 or 4 months, there has been no business, but we're paying taxes based on last year. So when we did try to go to the city and see, could they do anything about it? Nobody wants to get anything for nothing. Everybody has to pay their taxes, but we could get a deferral or something like that. Now, I know the city are under pressure. They got to get their budgets in and all that, but I think they've got to look at going forward. Every other country in the world is looking, and one of their main is tourism. Ireland, for instance, the governor giving a huge help. For instance, my sister's hotel is opening, and the government are still paying their salaries because they know as you said earlier on, there's no business there, and we must keep the doors open to get business. So I hope the city will look favorably on the tourism industry, because, again, it's not just hotels. It's restaurants. It's Broadway. It's museums. Everything has a trickle-on effect, and that is all revenue for the city. And yeah, a lot of hotels are closed, Adrian. We are probably one of the few hotels that are opened. Yeah. And there is no sign of hotels opening in the near future. I mean, this is what we're discussing with the Hotel Association yesterday. When this happened in March, we said we'd be open by June. It is now July, and I don't see any of these hotels opening before September. So the city has to realize that this tourism industry is worth an awful lot to the city, and they, and in some way they have to help, not just hotels, but the whole of the tourism, because that's what New York is. It's a tourist destination.
Yeah, agreed. It also is a bit short-sighted of New York City to, you know, at a time when existing is, you know, the goal, you want to excuse the pun, but the goal of the city looking for, again, exorbitant taxes based on last year. Somebody, you know, somebody ought to look at it and you know, isn't that biting the hand that feeds you? You know, to if that's supposed to help the economy, they better come up with another plan. And that's really the guts of it. You know, as hotels go out of business, as restaurants, and we see plenty of them, that can't simply hang on, much as they would like to, with all kinds of new restrictions, since many other areas seem like deferment of taxes and, you know, obligations shoved months ahead until things get better. It is, you know, and it's not, John, I wanted in particular to have you on because I'm sure that a great number of restaurants are, in fact, trying to wondering what the hell is going on here, you know, with the new restrictions, 50% capacity. You know, the splash in the pan sidewalk restaurants, cafes, and everything. Why wouldn't somebody say? Because the converse of what you've said about hotels and restaurants being very much a part of, you know, the restoration of the economy of New York City. Converse of that is that if that is not taken care of, where else? Where else is the revenue going to come from? And I hope that the word gets through, not just, you know, to Mayor de Blasio, but also, you know, there are some politicians who have their heads cocked for, you know, an election next year, and I don't want to single anybody out, but I will. I mean, there's Corey Johnson, who is, you know, head of the New York City Council, and he and others are, you know, seem like they've either thrown in the sponge or they are waiting to see, you know, how this thing is going to shake out. I don't think that a great number of the restaurants, and yes, this is an Irish program, so we talk in particular about Irish restaurants. They are not going to survive unless there is immediate action, and it is in the best interest of the city of New York to face that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, if you think of it, what I just said about the real estate tax, we paid it, and it's only part of the formula, it's not the full formula, but it's based on last year. So this time next year, if we're all still around, our taxes are going to be so low when we can afford to pay them, I hope. You know what I mean? Instead of adjusting it. And you're right. You know, what the city, you know, don't look at it too. Whenever there's an extra tax to come into the city, the first people they really hit is the hotels, and because they're taxing, like occupancy tax, they increase occupancy tax or them, because it's outside New Yorkers that pay that. So it's not the New Yorkers that have to pay it. And so, for them, from an election point of view and all, it suits them to tax the visitors. But, you know, if there's no hotels and there's going to be less tax coming in, they're going to have to go back and tax the local New Yorkers to make up the fund. So I think they'll have to look at it, and they can't turn a blind eye. We have approached them from the Hotel Association. I know it's under difficult times, and we appreciate that, but let's hope that they will reconsider and figure a formula, like every other place is organizing, of how to bring tourism back and to help it, because it's a huge part of the economy, especially New York.
Well said. I couldn't let this occasion pass without acknowledging, just on one part of your philanthropic efforts and success. You came up with an idea initially to honor your mother, Edna Fitzpatrick, with golf outings and with, events that have been so successful. And through the years, then obviously became, after your father's passing, Edna and Paddy Fitzpatrick, the success of that fundraiser and those annual events has added up through the years to a staggering amount of money. First of all, a great idea, and golf outings are not new. Golf outings have indeed, in many cases, have so many expenses that they don't, at the end of the day, they don't. The bottom line is that for all the effort that goes into it, it's not a money spinner. How, just give us a brief rundown of how you were able to raise and distribute millions of dollars through the Aetna and Paddy Fitzpatrick Foundation.
Yeah, well, thanks, Adrian, for bringing that up, because it is special to us all here. Yeah, it was when my mum passed away very suddenly. I just felt, probably we did it initially in a more of a selfish reason, because that she'd be remembered, because, you know, Dad wouldn't have been as successful he has, as you mentioned earlier on, without Mum. They were a team. So we decided to set up the Edna Paddy Fitz Memorial, and didn't really know what to do with it first. And, my mum died of a massive heart attack, so I decided to do the Heart Association. But then I got involved with the Ireland Funds, and one of the great things about the Ireland Funds is they give you projects. If you're looking to support something, they find out what you're interested in. And to me then, Northern Ireland was a big part of what I was looking at the time. So we set that up. And we then started up to Cooperation Ireland, to a couple of Coramila and Reconciliation Centre. And then, you know, my father saw me doing this, and he said, well, he was very good. He came over every year first, and until he passed away. And then when Dad passed away, he became part of the memorial, of course. And I remember the first one was up in Knollwood Country Club. And, you know, as you say, it's very hard to make money. And the late Brendan Grace was brilliant. I mean, I've been so lucky with supporters of the Irish. They really have got behind us. You know, Ronan Collins still comes out every year to do MC. But I remember the first year, and Brendan got up and did his piece. But I had a great guy there, an Irish-American there, who was coming from one of the unions in Washington, Ed Hanley. And he said to me, he said, how much did you make tonight? And that stage, it was the first year I made 10 grand. I said, make 10,000 out of it. And he said, well, you tell Brendan to go back up on that stage there now, and if he does Father the Bride, I'll match it. And that's what kicked it off. We raised 20. Well, last year, I was up in Sleepy Hollow, and we ended up raising 450,000, and that's over the 20-something years. It's gone up now to 4.5 million. And again, just as the support of everybody around New York, people fly in for it. and the causes we support. So this year, unfortunately, we had to take the decision not to do it, but we'll be back next May. And it's as strong, as you say, golf tournaments can be hard, but for some reason, we just get the support. And every year, you know, I got to 25 years there a few years ago, and someone said, well, are you going to finish it now with your 25th anniversary? I said, no, we'll keep doing it as long as we can raise money. And so, you know, thanks to all of you, and you're there every year, everybody. It's going from strength to strength.
That's a great story and a great success story. John, I know that a lot of people in the hospitality industry, you know, befriend you and look towards you as, you know, a leader, and particularly in getting things done. And there's an Irish clique of all of you who are in it, and rather than, you know, point any differences, there is a clique. It's an Irish clique, and personified in both the hospitality and the restaurant and the hotel industry. And it's great. It's terrific, and long may it last. Again, thanks, John, and good luck. And hopefully, you know, again, you have a, and Fitzpatrick's have a great, you know, record of not letting anything go. Yeah. And as a leader with a great, I think it would be only fitting to say that your staff and everybody in Fitzpatrick Hotel, a family. It started off as a family, and it still is.
Well, you're very good, Adrian, and I agree with you. I think the secret to our success is the team I have around me. And, you know, we've come through plenty of things. If someone said to me, how did you open 91 during the Gulf War? How did you get through 9/11? We Irish are tough, and New Yorkers are tough, and we will come through this. I'm glad to see there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but we need a little bit more, and let's hope everyone gets behind us, including the city. And I really appreciate you bringing up the issue with the city, and I hope our city council and the Corey Johnsons of this world realize what the tourism does to this city and how we help each other. So, and again, Adrian, thank you for having me on your show, because I think you had me on when I first opened, and we're still here 40 years later, so thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, John Fitzpatrick and friends, again, a leader in the hospitality industry, and he has a lot of people in the hospitality industry that indeed pay a lot of attention to him and should.